It is Wednesday, the 11th of January, and this is episode 102 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome to another episode. I'm Chris, and we have a full complement. I've got Henry with me.
Hello there, Chris.
And Ian's with me. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Whoop, whoop. Our schedule of one a week starting from the new year is obviously going very well, seeing as we're now into week two. But, you know, why start as you mean to go? But anyway, it's always quiet the first week of the year, so we haven't really missed anything. And let's crack on with the news. We're going to start today with Google. Google's been featuring a bit in the last week because they have released a new search product, or rather they have integrated Google Plus now into their search results. So when you search on Google, you also get your friends' stuff.
And it's quite possibly the best, worst name ever. It's Google Search Plus Your World.
Is it Search Plus Your World, or is it Search Plus Your World, or Search Plus Your World?
Every Google product.
Or Search Plus Your World.
Search Plus. Search Plus Your.
Every Google product from now on is going to have plus in it, either a symbol or the word plus. I've got it enabled in mine, and when I do a search for something that I have done, so I'll do hill walking. My own photos and photos I've been tagged in appear, which is quite nice, and I can easily toggle that off and on.
When you say they appear, you mean they appear in line with the other search results? How are they differentiated?
So I searched for cobbler, for example, which is a hill I walked, and the first and second results in the photo stream were my photos, and it did say on it you. Just in case I didn't recognise myself. So I quite like that.
Well, that's in case you search for something like the greatest hill walker in the world ever. Yeah. And, you know, you would come up, obviously, at the top of the results. You know, you'd feel much better about that.
I thought it was also helpful for when I searched for a GIMP mask, and I'm not quite sure if it is me in the GIMP.
And you.
It does clarify that it's you. You are number one.
So how does it feel in use? Because it sounds like it's sort of confusing what you might want to use Google search for, which is probably not searching your own Google Plus areas.
I actually think it's, in some ways I can see it being quite helpful, because it's back to they started a social search off 2 or 3 years ago, and they were trying to say that if I trusted my friend's opinion and I search for Nikon cameras and I get, you know, everybody in my friends or Google Plus circles that have been taught about Nikon cameras, and they're coming back more strongly than just random people's, you know, search engine optimized content, then in some ways I can see it being a positive. I guess what it's been controversial this week is that things like Google Plus profiles, once you're logged into this service, do jump up the search listings. So they have kind of just their own search, or sorry, just their own content, and that's the bit that's got people slightly concerned.
Well, it's got Twitter pissed off, to be quite frankly, as well, hasn't it? They've kind of come out and said, Twitter is the best place for news nowadays. We've proved that on numerous occasions. So the fact that now Google doesn't show it as a results in the results pages is bad, and wah 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 boo boo. To which Google came back and said, well, if you'd renewed your agreement with us, which we offered you, then you wouldn't have all that. So
yep, and we talked about this before. I used to use that real-time Twitter search in Google because it was better than Twitter's own search. Is still awful.
Another big news story, Netflix launches in the UK. I say big story. We knew it was coming. It has now happened, probably sooner than I expected it. But I had a quick look at the offering that they've got out there, and there's nothing that strikes me as a must have. I don't know if you were in. I mean, it's going to cost £6 a month to instantly stream on all your devices. So you subscribe once then you can stream anywhere you want.
Yep, and I thought how it was implemented was quite smart across the devices, and the two or three things I'd started watching where I'd kind of paused it then they had, you know, I could go to another client and it would resume from there, and I could watch it on iPad or Mac or Xbox or PS3. But the content I thought was rubbish, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, there were one or two things in there that I thought I might quite enjoy, but maybe, you know, not enough for every single month paying out every, you know. I think I'd run out of content that I wanted to actually watch quite quickly. So, yeah, I mean, and also Amazon came out this week with their Love film, and they reduced it by, I think they've undercut Netflix now. So there's a bit of a price war going on, I think.
They've undercut by a pound, but Love Film's got more content, but it's all SD. And SD streamed, I think, just looks really pixely, especially on a big telly. So it's...
Yeah, I've not seen the quality of either of those.
But I'm a bit of a snob.
But at least one thing that is good is we've got competition in this market, and I think once people start spending money on it, which they will, I think you'll see content providers come on board with it more, because that's always the problem at the moment, is content providers.
Let's be honest, Sky is expensive. You know, Sky and Virgin cost a lot of money.
For most of the content that you don't really want to watch.
No, I think the big problem they've got is they're up against BBC. You know, they've got something like a BBC sitting there, which is a big behemoth to try and compete with. And iPlayer works really, really well.
No, you know you're not going to get a complaint from me on that front.
Apart from it's not an Xbox yet.
Yeah, it's still not, even though they said it would be nearly soon. I can feel it. I can feel it in my waters. We've also had Roku. Roku's been launched in the UK this week. Roku's been around in the States for ages and is kind of the go-to... TV smart box, if you like, very tied into Netflix, so they kind of two go hand in hand, and so they've chosen this time to launch £50 basically their lower end box, and pretty much £100 for their more I guess just higher spec box. Either of you interested?
No,
I've got an Apple TV, so it's not gonna
Yeah, I've got an Apple TV, and that doesn't excite me at all.
Yeah, but you said it was tied into Netflix, and if you reboot your Apple TV, you can get Netflix on the Apple TV. So if you've already got an Apple TV, I just don't see the appeal. I think if you've not got an Apple TV, then it's a nice cheap box that you can slap under your telly.
I assume it sort of web enables your TV and all that kind of nice jazz at the same time. So, and probably is a bit more open than Apple TV is.
It's a bit more open, and they've always been hardware-wise slightly cheaper. You know, so if your Apple TV was, I don't know, £100, you could go for a Roku for like half the price or two thirds of the price.
Okay, so we will wait for some feedback on whether it's any good at some point. ZBox. Ian, do you want to take us through ZBox and what it means?
So ZBox was an app launched last year. I don't know if any of you chaps have tried it, seeing as we're all iPad users.
Yeah, I really like it, actually.
Yeah, so it's like they call it a second screen. So you use it alongside, you know, you're watching your TV, you're watching, I don't know, Question Time, or you're watching, think of something, you're watching Doctor Who, and it tries
Or Celebrity Big Brother.
Yeah, thanks. I was trying to avoid that because Chris just gets embarrassed that he is actually still watching it.
I am.
You're embarrassed? You are embarrassed, or you're still watching
it? I'm still watching it, and I'm embarrassed. I'm almost beyond embarrassment now. I just know that my taste in TV is bad. Horses for courses.
So what ZBox tries to do is it kind of ties up to any hashtags that are around about that program. So it's giving you all the kind of content online. So if you're watching Celebrity Big Brother, any hashtags associated with that, you can click on it, easily see all the tweets that are coming through. But it also tries to link back to program makers' extra content, you know, so videos and websites, and it's just trying to give a richer, more intelligent, you know, TV, you know, so here's all this extra content that you can get alongside the main program.
You know what? This is great for advertisers, because for ages now, the trend has been away from watching anything that's live, and, you know, therefore fast-forwarding through all the advert breaks. And this is one way that they can start interacting and making you, force you to watch it live, because you cannot do it without being live.
Absolutely. So Sky have declared 2012 the year of the app, and one of the things they've done is bought a stake in ZBox. So Sky's apps are actually pretty damn good. So Sky Go, you've got Sky News, Sky Sports News came out, all very rich, very visual, and they're going to integrate ZBox by the summer.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I mean, so you used it, Henry. I mean, it doesn't actually interest. I don't know. Did you watch Newswipe, whatever it's called, by Charlie Brooker's of the year?
Yes.
Yeah, he kind of took the piss out of the fact that you just can't watch something live and keep up with the Twitter because it just you end up not watching.
I mean, nothing happens in Celebrity Big Brother anyway. So, I mean, watching the Twitter feed is probably more exciting than actually watching the content.
OMG. Did you see that? Yeah, I did. I was watching it.
I do like I'm with you, Ian. The Sky apps are really great. A friend of mine works for Sky and is saying that one of the things that they're really trying to do is work on changing the adverts that are on your Sky Plus box anyway. So that as you're replaying them, it'll update the ads to be like the current ones. So if you're watching ones from 3 months ago or something from 3 months ago or 6 months ago, you'll get ads which are up to date.
I mean, it sounds very clever, but I don't care as long as they don't stop me fast forwarding through them and they don't have a pre and post roll. That would annoy me.
I can see it because I know in America they start to force you to watch adverts. I can just see it happening. It's the same way as if you watch it online. If you go to Channel 4 and you try to watch a TV program, yes, the program's free. Yes, I can stream it, but I will be forced to watch 60 seconds of adverts.
Yes, and
somewhere in between.
The worst one's the STV player, if you've tried that, because it won't let you fast forward past the ad breaks. So you got these lines in the stream below, and you want to try and get to something that's maybe 40 minutes in. There's no way you can scrub past things. You've got to watch all the adverts. And if you want to watch something that's past two or three advert breaks, you've got to watch all three advert breaks.
I mean, this is I can see why as an advertiser you want all this in, and
I can see as an advertiser, but I can see that as an advertiser, I can understand the funding because it all costs money. But at the end of the day, it's a real sucky experience as well.
And most people go out and make their cups of tea in the adverts breaks anyway, so they're not really being exposed.
Oh no! Anyway. Fast forward to times 30. Wait about 15-20 seconds. Press play. Gold.
Absolutely. In fact, it's that masterful art of getting to the 30 speed forward and back to the normal again just at the right time to not have to experience any of the adverts. Anyway, I guess the big news has been CES, but having said it's the big news, really it hasn't excited me at all this year. We have seen lots of tablets, generic meh tablets. We have seen lots of ultrabooks, think MacBook Air, but with other logos on. Loads of TVs. One of note being the 55-inch OLED, which does look incredible, but will cost you $8,000 probably. And then Microsoft came up with Kinect for Windows, which is pretty much Kinect for Xbox, but works at a shorter distance.
And at double the price.
And at double the price because it's not being subsidized by games and Xbox Live.
Yeah.
And there you go. That summarizes CES. Meh.
Funnily enough, that's what I wrote down as well.
I did like the idea of the wheels that you put on your feet and are motorized. I thought they were, but then I've got the non-motorized version already, I have to confess. So the fact that you could get something that's a motor as well is just genius.
I think we should do some sort of gadget so special with you showing off your non-motorized wheels.
Yeah, we could have a really fake race and make it cheesy as you like. And then blow them up at the end.
And you can overtake me with like 10 seconds to go. Yeah.
Oh my God!
And I'll scream like a girl.
Brilliant. There you go. That sums up Gadget Show as well, doesn't it? We're doing a good summary show. This is old news now, but iTunes Match, we've got it. And I subscribed and service was fine. Found most of my songs. Now they're on cloud and occasionally I download a track and listen to it. And that's the...
Great.
Yeah, I imagine that it was the same for you.
Pretty much. Did you sign up, Henry?
No, I didn't, but I did upgrade my Virgin Broadband, so I've got 6 months free Spotify.
Oh, very nice. Well, I guess the only reason I kept this story in was I did sign up and I couldn't believe because it uploaded like 30, 40 gigs worth of music to the cloud and I'm using Virgin. So it took about a day. But it was the, I then selected all the ones that are better quality, deleted them and re-downloaded them from iTunes Match. And that was 61 gigabytes of music that I downloaded. And it was like, wow.
That is a lot of music.
I do remember, I did moan about the length of time, and Chris quite eloquently tweeted, "You've just spent a day and spent £21 and legitimised your whole music collection." And I was like, yeah, that's pretty cool.
I own those tracks now, yeah. Spotify, since they've put the apps in, revelation for me. I'm just on it all the time at the moment. I love the apps. Want more of them.
The apps are very, very good. But I thought iTunes Match was excellent. It could do with a bit more explanation. I think a lot of people don't understand what it does.
If you don't have a big music collection, there's actually not a lot of benefit to it. I mean, I haven't got a massive benefit to having it because my iPad, I don't really listen to music on it, and I don't have an iPhone. So it's just my machines and... Okay, I can listen to any of my tracks anywhere, but I could probably do that before with a bit of syncing.
Well, the one thing that's interesting is that if you're listening to it on other computers, it streams. It's only on the mobile devices that you need to... It actually does a download rather than streaming. So it does turn it into a bit of a streaming service, which is nice.
Yep, and also nice, Virgin. Going to give you... Woo-hoo! Give you double the download.
Woohoo!
For no extra money. So pretty much whatever you had before, as long as you weren't already on 100, they will just double what you had.
This is fantastic.
For those people that are affected by it, I'm sure it's like really good. And for those people who haven't got it, it's blooming annoying.
Yeah. Is it good for you, Ian?
It's good for me, Henry. It's good for you.
It's very good for me.
So I read this today and thought, fantastic. So I'll be, I guess sometime in the next 18 months, I'll be moving on to 100 meg. Download, 10 meg upload, and there'll be a new router delivered as well. Happy days.
Resigning.
The best bit of this was actually BT, whose response was, "It's no surprise to see that Virgin are following our lead by doubling speeds. We announced we'd do this for our fibre products last autumn, and so they're trying to catch up with us." And I read that and thought, you cock. Don't mention the speed. Don't mention it's 20 meg that you offer, not 100 and 120.
Their technology can't even cope anyway.
Our team will probably get a pat on the back for doing that official response and making it look like Virgin are merely copying us.
Yes, like you say, it's not comparing like for like. I mean, Virgin have now pretty much managed to turn that network into the best national network by fair margin, I'd say. Especially the costs.
I'm sure Henry will back me up. What I love is that I don't see a degradation in speed.
No.
It delivers. I mean, I'm getting 50 meg, and I do get 50 meg. It's excellent.
Boo hiss.
I've told you before, move to Glasgow. Quite easy.
I still haven't done it though, somehow. Microsoft have been taking pirates to court again. But this time it happens to be Comet, the retailer.
Not Comet the pirate?
It does have a piratey sound to it, doesn't it? To summarise again, I think it's Comet have been selling recovery discs, which will recover someone's PC back to its factory default state. And Microsoft hasn't given it. There was no license for them to be able to do that. Microsoft are saying, you're not allowed to do that. And Comet are kind of saying, we're trying to prove that we do have the right to do that, basically.
No, Comet are saying, we're going bust. Leave us alone.
You're flogging a dead horse here.
Yeah, actually, but that wasn't... I mean, they are going bust, you're right. But that's not what they said, which is, you know, it's rather ironic because, Microsoft may well... Even if they win this case, they're not going to get any cash. But I suppose it's not really about the cash anyway, is it? But Comet, fair play to them. They came out and said, look, we've taken legal advice and, we don't think Microsoft have got a leg to stand on in this case at all. You know, it seems perfectly reasonable that our customers have bought a valid license for Windows. And if they can't, you know, put it on a backup disk, then, what are they actually buying in the first place? So I'm actually with Comet on this one. I think
it's from a consumer point of view, it's semantics, isn't it? Who produces the disc, whether it's the consumer themselves, which I assume they're allowed to do, you know, because they've got the license and you are allowed to legally back up once. But it's because it's Comet doing it and distributing the discs that I believe that there's that bit of muddy waters, but they're not doing it for any gain other than just saving the consumer having to do it themselves.
And it's interesting, I've always kind of hated this idea of like recovery CDs. It's always been a bit naff. And Windows 8 is going to have a couple of options that Windows hasn't really had before. One is to basically set it back to default settings. And the second one is to, set it back but keep all my apps, almost like do a cleanup. So it looks like they're trying to address that kind of... And I don't know if it still has that issue. Windows always had this reputation of 6 months to a year, and you would have to do a reinstall because it just built up so much fluff and crud.
I'd say that my Windows 7 has been relatively consistent, but you do still get that impression that, you know, service packs definitely help because they do tend to wind things up into one big, conglomerate. But it's as much as anything, it's always developers that caused the problem by replacing DLLs and things with later versions that don't actually, or bigger numbers that don't actually keep backwards compatibility and things like that. So it's...
Yeah, there's no excuse for DLLs these days. There's no reason to use DLLs.
They still
discs were a premium and things were that was a problem. Now you can just, if you package everything up into the one, it's bloatware, but really from a it does save the DLL hell. But I just can't see this working, to be perfectly honest. I can't see either, you want to put things back to factory settings, but keep all your apps. Well, the issue with a lot of the time is what's in the registry anyway. So how does it know whether you're going to delete stuff in the registry or it's not going to delete stuff in the registry? And you're still left with the rubbish.
School ICT is going to be replaced by a new computer science program.
So that man, Michael Gove, did I speak today? Why are you laughing?
I don't know. All right. It's just that name, it makes me laugh. I'm not sure why.
It's his face, you just want to punch it. But basically they've looked at the current information and communications technology curriculum. This is only in England, but they've basically said it's a mess, it's outdated, it's old fashioned, it doesn't interest kids, and it doesn't make them fit for either further education or for business. And so they want to do something far more radical. And it's now actually, let's replace teaching Excel and PowerPoint and some Mickey Mouse other bits and pieces, and let's actually teach them programming, teach them actual real world stuff. And it sounds good in paper, but there's a couple of really dodgy quotes in there. It'd be great to have 16-year-olds creating their own apps for smartphones and 18-year-olds able to write their own simple programming language.
Why would you want to write your own programming language?
Who knows? But I think it's a good step.
Well, I think it is a good step. I mean, in Scotland, it's not any better, and certainly the computing curriculum is so out of date. Our education system is not geared up for technology, for stuff which changes. You've got new phones coming out at least every 6 months. New technology is changing. It's changing all the time, and our education system can't actually keep up. So, anything that is done to try and address that has to be good. But I'm not convinced that really that this is going to really work. But we'll.
I think things like programming, they have to be surely interest driven. I mean, programming languages haven't changed fundamentally now for a while. And so therefore they're still quite complicated and you have to be a bit geeky to want to even get involved in that. And I don't think you're going to change that by teaching someone how to print hello 10 times.
But I think they're trying not to make it let's teach them to print hello 10 times. I guess it's a couple of things. Henry's just quickly added, I mean, Raspberry Pi, which we touched on last year, was the, I think it was a 20 quid or 25 quid computer that David Brabham has been developing. So it's that little tiny, it will run Quake 3 Arena or Quake 3. So it's quite powerful for its size and its price. And what he's looking to do is develop a nation of, he's thinking back to when he was a kid and you had a Spectrum and a Commodore and you hacked away. I still think there is probably a generation that the current education system lets down because they want to do that and learn that and they don't have that opportunity.
But I don't think those kids, did they ever learn that in school, or was it just because they got interested and wanted to do it and it was accessible like that?
Probably the latter, but yeah. There's no reason why. I think that's even more reason that if there's a large group of kids out there that do want to learn it formally, then you know it should be a good place to do it at school, not the kind of traditional way of learning, which is fairly fuddy-duddy and is of pretty much no use.
And I think, the Raspberry Pi computers are just I think they're going to revolutionise things because kids can get hold of them. You know, I mean, 15 quid, and you've got a working computer there and limited really only by your imagination. So I think it'll be really, it's a great thing for getting kids just to play around with. And, you know, they're not going to trash their parents' PC or like that. So they're going to see, actually get right down to the nuts and bolts of how things actually work. I think it's a really good development.
And just touching on it, what really should have been my pick is something that Code Academy launched. Now, Code Academy was a kind of web startup last year, and it was to try and encourage people to go to their website and learn programming. But they've started up Code Year, and they've got 250,000 people signing up that are interested in actually learning to code. And I've signed up.
They're kind of inline tutorials, aren't they? So they kind of take you through step by step, and you actually type the code as you're going. And
so week one's to come through, getting started with programming. It's all going to be in JavaScript. And what they're hoping to do is that within the next few weeks, we'll further explain some of the topics we'll cover. And they hope within like the first couple of months, you'll have your own little game developed online. And I think it's the level of interest is probably a lot stronger than they thought it would be.
There you go. We'll keep an eye out then for new programmers coming, stealing our jobs. Come on over here.
What do you mean coming over here? You're racist. You're absolute racist.
He meant from Wales. He's talking about the invasion of the Welsh programmers.
I'm trying to think of a quip. It's not happening. Let's talk about. I'm going to briefly talk about games because one thing I have had time for since the beginning of the year is playing Skyrim, and love it. I think it's awesome. I've been fully addicted and sinking too many hours into that. But also, R-Factor 2, the beta got released yesterday. And although I haven't had a chance to really have a good go out on it, R-Factor 2 is the kind of the next gen simulator, car driving simulator. And it's pretty awesome from what I can tell so far. There you go, exciting.
Fantastic. And the only other thing I was going to add is 24th of May, Ghost Recon Future Soldier.
No way. No way.
No, Henry won't have played Ghost Recon the same level of detail that we've probably played it. This game's been delayed for 3 years, but they're trying to say it's only been delayed a year.
Yeah, right. In their minds.
It's allegedly coming out on May 24th.
Anyway, that's the end of the news. Let's have a look at some picks. So, Ian, have you got a pick? I know you've got it because it's written here.
Thanks. Seamless. My first pick of the year is a little Mac app, and it's free, and it's called Flux. Well, I think it's called Flux because it's kind of like F period Lux. I'm sure there's some clever way of pronouncing it.
You're a bit paranoid these days.
I am slightly paranoid after the Scribd incident.
Yeah.
But Flux. And all it does is it sits in the tray, and it works out where you are in the world, and it sets your colour temperature depending on the time of the day. So during the day, it's nice and bright, and at night, it kind of soothes it down a little bit. And at first, I thought it was a bit gimmicky, but after tinkering with the settings and getting it to change to what I like, it's lovely.
So what does it change?
It's just changing the colour temperature of the screen, so it just makes it less bright and garish.
Okay.
So if you remember before, if I was doing the podcast, I'd go all purple. Now I'll just go kind of orangey. I'll go kind of warm. And it's because of the bright harshness of the screen.
And does it make it feel more consistent through the day, or do you actually just notice because, you know, it's deliberately
Flux makes your computer screen look like the room you're in all the time. When the sun sets, it makes your computer look like your indoor lights. In the morning, it makes things look like sunlight again. That's so good, I could have copied it off the website.
Could have been reading it. Okay, well, there you go. So where do we get that?
Show notes.
Yeah, okay. Link in the show notes. And my pick this week is a bit like Street View, basically. So again, there will be a link in the show note to the video. But effectively, they shove their laser scanner on top of a car and drive along like the Street View cars do. And it maps data points, basically, at a pretty high resolution, high enough that they can reconstruct those data points into a moving video. And it almost looks like a video. It's that high resolution, and it's quite frightening to think what they could do with this data going forward.
Now, imagine if you were developing PGR and you just got this, drove around the city and said, there's your new track.
It's just the idea that though everything can be stored as the data. It's like they can recreate the model world and you can actually walk around it. Now, I have every confidence that some of this is smoke and mirrors, because it obviously will be, you know, if things are obscured, then it kind of loses the data for that area. So they'd have to they'd have to drive down the road, you know, both ways, for example, for it to really start working. But this proves that it's possible, and it's almost video like. It's hard to believe that these are all sort of data points. 3DLaserMapping.com is what you want to have a look at.
Very good. I've not really got a pick today, but I have had a lot of fun with Action Movie, the app that was around, and so I've been blowing up my colleagues at work and my computer on my desk and all these kind of things. Worth a bit of a giggle. Nice free little app there. Works well on the iPhone. Not tried it on the iPad, but
called Action Movie.
Action Movie. I think it's one of those apps that was released to coincide with the that new movie that came out. The
MI4, Mission Impossible 4.
That's the one. All it does is you take a 5-second video and it superimposes some special effects, maybe some missiles firing in at the particular point on the screen. And blows them up. But what's quite clever is the way it then obscures with black smoke what you've just blown up. So it can look, if you get it just right, it can look really quite realistic, and is a lot of fun for getting rid of that annoying colleague, at least in your at least on your phone.
And that is our podcast, first one done for the year. If you want to find out more about us, you can at www.digitaloutbox.com. And we are on email, info@digitaloutbox.com, Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. If you happen to want to hear what I've got to tweet, you can at Cheesy UK. Henry, where can we listen to your ramblings?
Yeah, I send the odd tweet, the odd half even completed tweet. 140 characters is too much for me sometimes.
Micro tweets.
So micro tweets, yes. I'm Talk Rhubarb on Twitter.
And Ian?
And I'll be Shweeper on Twitter and the blog is indie.net.
There you go, all wrapped up and done. We will speak at you again, well, I would say next week, but we're a bit slack on that. So we'll see. When the next one arrives in your streams. Speak to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Have a nice time.
Oh.